the Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's good Monday. Thanks for being with us. Wilner Hotline, John Wilner, all things around the Pac-12. John Wilner joins us every week, national voice around the Pac-12 conference. Wilner Hotline, that comes up at 10:20. Ron Wolfley and I chopped it up earlier today. Of course, Ron has his show over on the radio side. So we will bring you Ron and I chopping it up about where the Cardinals are after losing yesterday. It's not as bad as it looks. The record is not great, but it's the NFL. It's middle of October. Guys just trying to get healthy. Guys just trying to come back. Teams just trying to figure it out. I thought there was a little bit more improvement in some areas. I don't know why they stink right out of the gate. I really don't. You're outscored 38-0 so far through five games. It's just, you know, the NFL product early in the season, like sitting there watching, you know, the other night where you have Denver and Indianapolis, and who's just, God, it was painful. And you're going to have those games early on in the season. And, you know, the Cardinals are in that space, I think. Not taking anything away from Philadelphia. It's a nice win for the Eagles. They're still undefeated. But Ron and I will chop it up. It's from earlier. We'll have that on the show as well. Opening comments brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union. Taking care of you. Taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. As always, we appreciate their support. The chairman of the board, as always, is the Iron Man, Jared Nielsen. If anything screws up on this show, it's his fault, not mine. Well, I shouldn't go that far because he doesn't screw up. But I do on occasion. What a great weekend. It was actually one of those weekends where, you know, the sports stuff aside, it was my wife's birthday. And so in the sports world, because we do work nights, weekends, and holidays, this is not a normal gig. Like, I do this at 10 a.m., couple days a week, 3 days a week, but I'm going all sorts of places, watching all sorts of things. The sports world never sleeps here in the busy sports market of America, but you've got to make time for the personal things in life in this space, or you're going to end up divorced and lonely. I've just seen it happen too many times. If you're thinking about getting into this business, just know it is not 9 to 5. It is not white picket fence. You got to go. You know, when Herm gets blown out or quits or whatever you want to say, it's a Sunday morning at 9, got to go. If Ray Anderson wants to talk on a Sunday afternoon at 3, got to go. You know, the Cardinals play on Sundays. It's always amazing to me when people want to get into this business and say, do you like working nights, weekends, and holidays? And they kind of tilt their head. And I'm like, you know, that's when sports happens, right? So that is a big, long, drawn-out backdrop. It was her birthday. And her birthday was on Saturday. She wanted to go golfing a couple of days. That's who I'm married to. Someone who says, hey, let's go golf for my birthday. I'm not going to say no. I want to go see a movie. That's what she said. She said, I want to go golf with you a couple times. And so we golfed at Southern Dunes because we love it out at Southern Dunes. And we went to Trilogy. So we liked that course. And then she said, I want to see Amsterdam. So we go to a matinee. We see Amsterdam. Amsterdam's pretty good. Got a lot of political overtones to it. If you're not one of those that wants to watch something on the political side of things, this is not the movie for you. It's got a great cast, and it's not for everybody. I saw Rotten Tomatoes gave like a 30% approval rating. So, you know, we're going into the weekend thinking that we are going to be at our son's football game on Friday night. Okay, Friday we'll go golf. Friday night we'll see him play football. Saturday, we'll go to a movie and we'll play some golf and so on and so forth. Well, that didn't happen. I don't know why. I'm starting to believe the global warming is it's a real deal because the monsoon season was supposed to end like 3 weeks ago. And Friday night, we're at the football game, about ready to get started to go in. And all of a sudden, there's just this mega storm. And there's lightning everywhere and thunder and stay in your cars. And then it goes for an hour and they're playing Chandler. It's Castillo against Chandler. Yeah, I want to see Chandler in person. It's number 5 team in the nation. I like Rick Gerritsen. I like a lot of their players. Their quarterback's number 1 ranked kid in the class of 2024. A lot of things for me to see and support my son. And it's my wife's birthday weekend. And she's like, yeah, it's fine. Well, this lightning storm turned into not an hour, not 2 hours, but a cancellation of the game on Friday night. So Friday night, that's kind of blown up. Then this turns to Saturday, which they're going to play at 3 o'clock. Game starts at 3. We went to the movie earlier in the day. I've got my man cave here with everything rolling because I'm going to go back and watch ASU. I didn't go to the game, but I'll go back and watch it. I've got people. Jordan Spurgeon was in Tucson. I'll watch that game back. Fine. Lightning moves in again on Saturday afternoon, this time in the second quarter or right at halftime. So again, it gets the game gets delayed starting in the third quarter. Sun doesn't get home till 7:30. So much for the birthday dinner. So much for everything. But we worked it out. And I watched the Super Cardinals play yesterday. So, and we all know how that all went. So it was a great weekend all the way around. The amount of people that have contacted me about Sean Aguano and the job that he did over the weekend, it's interesting. There's a group that says this is the biggest joke ever, having a high school coach who's a running back coach fill in at Arizona State University, and that they're not going to give him the time of day. There's not a chance that ASU could hire him as their head coach, and so on and so forth. It's supposed to be in an event later today where Sean's going to be at. And I'll just be interested. There's going to be some big cigars there. Just be seeing, you know, he's got to play that game. He only gets one bite at the apple. Like, the chances of him getting the permanent job are slim, in my opinion, because I think this president just likes to have big names. And there's some good names that are out there that I would understand. But I also believe that if Sean Aguano goes out and wins 5-6 games down the stretch, that he could be right in the middle of the mix for a number of reasons. So there's a litany of reasons why this job is a mirage in some cases. And people are just like, oh, it's the greatest thing ever. Well, it hasn't been for, I don't know, it was the last time they went to the Rose Bowl when they weren't playing UCLA. 97, long time. It's a mirage. Got to change a lot of things. So as Saturday unfolded and the Fighting Aguanos, as I like to call them, come away with the victory against Washington, they do it with an Arizona quarterback. It's the last time an Arizona quarterback has gone out and done something on the football field. And the answer would be Ryan Keeley, probably, for those of you that followed the program that long, that did something in a big way, led them to a victory they weren't expecting to get. Does it mean that they should give him the job today? The answer is no. Doesn't mean that, because he should have as many questions for them as they should have for him. And I don't know where the NIL stands, because people talk about NIL and the collectives around Arizona State. They'll talk. But until you see it over a period of time, is there a sustainability behind the NIL group there at Arizona State? That remains to be seen. Very fair question to ask. This morning, Matt Rhule was fired at Carolina. I've mentioned Matt Rhule's name. I'm intrigued by Matt Rhule at the college level. Matt Rhule won big in college. He went to the NFL, didn't work. Happens. He's getting paid so much money that for Arizona State being up against it, this may be an opportunity. You have to at least pick up the phone and call Matt Rhule's people. He may need a few weeks to clear his head, but shoot, around November 1st, November 15th, you got to have this thing figured out before the U of A game. You just have to. You can't sit there December 15th on the early signing period. If you hire a guy around December 10th, they are completely swimming upstream. If you're able to land someone of Matt Rhule's name caliber, I don't know if Sean Aguano would want to be on his staff or if Matt Rhule would want him to be. You know, the way that Sean is comporting himself, he's putting himself in a very good spot either way. I think he's putting himself in a very good spot of, let's say that they don't go his direction because he was part of the previous staff that the NCAA is looking at, and that's out there, and I think that's fair. But Sean was a finalist at Hawaii. And why is not the greatest job in the world, but it's not like he hasn't interviewed before. He's shown his competency in the local recruiting efforts just in the last couple weeks. That's not how you build a program top to bottom, but it certainly is part of the metric that's been missing here. He's created a little bit of buzz and enthusiasm. Not a lot. You know, when people take a picture of an empty stadium and say, see, no, that's years and years and years of build-up, neglect, anger towards the program. It is. There's some other very good coaches, sitting head coaches, that may come available, but there's just a lot of factors here at Arizona State that I think make it a guy like Sean Aguano could be the right fit at the right time. Kenny Dillingham at Oregon, their offensive coordinator, wants this job, from my understanding. And yet, you know, Oregon puts up a lot of points, but that is Oregon. Oregon can go get a quarterback and bring him in, and he's competitive. How Sean handles this quarterback so-called controversy right now, it'll be interesting. You know, at least he's got options there, and it's a bye week. So there's a lot around that. Watched a bunch of the Padres-Mets series. The baseball playoffs at this new format, to me, so far have been very entertaining. Like watching Philadelphia come out of the blue and dispatch St. Louis the way they went about it, it's impressive. And the games, it's what you want. For Seattle to be in a postseason where the city is buzzing, it tells me that here in our little slice of heaven, the Diamondbacks can get this thing figured out and turned around and be in a push next season. They simply get a bullpen together, but it's fun. It is. And on the Cardinals end, I wish I had answers for you on why they're outscored 38-0. I wish I could tell you that Kyler should have known where to slide. I wish I could have told you would have known that. All that stuff, it just continues to be the weekly, this team can't figure it out for a full four quarters. And when all it is well, when DeAndre Hopkins comes back, it's going to be a scary good offense. Like, the defense has played well. Zach Allen has played really well. J.J. Watt has been very productive. And then you look at some of the guys in the back end. You know, I'd like to see more out of Marcus Golden. I'd like to see more of a pass rush. A kicker is going to miss a kick, but a kicker being replaced, that's part of the business. That's your job. You make the kick. That was not, the conditions aren't going to be any better for you. You're indoors, you're on grass. It's the game winner. It's what you get paid to do. So I think in that space, they change out their kicker. It's still, there's other facets of the game that got to get turned around. And they go to Seattle this week. But the season's not over. All right. Wilner on the other side, and then my conversation earlier with Ron Wolfley. I'm Brad Sussmat. It is time, as we do every Monday, to catch up with the one and only John Wilner. You can follow John's content on Wilner Hotline, at Wilner Hotline, and on the website at sports360az.com. You can hear him on the Canzano Wilner podcast as well. It is sweeping the nation, as we like to say, in the industry. All right, we're halfway through the season just about, and I think it's probably a good space this week to just take a step back and say, all right, what has really surprised John Wilner from the Pac-12 standpoint? It could be on the field, it could be off the field, but you're sitting here now into October saying, I never would have thought that this would be happening. What would that be, John?
Well, off the field, I don't think there's any big surprises. Like, let's quickly address the existential crisis, right? I think it was reasonable to assume that there was not going to be a resolution, a new media rights deal, expansion decision at this point, right? And I think that we could be several months before we know what the future of this conference is going to look like. On the field, you know, I think the biggest surprise is the overall quality of play at the top is better than it's been the last few years, right? And you're judged by how strong the top of your conference is. Pac-12 has got, what, four teams ranked still? Two undefeated teams, both of them in Los Angeles. I think UCLA is probably a little better than a lot of people thought. The quarterback play is better. The coaching is better. All those transfers that quarterbacks that came into the conference have elevated it. There's offense again. You know, that's important. You gotta score points. And there have been a lot of years where lately the Pac-12 has frankly struggled at quarterback position and scoring points. So it's exciting. They played some big games. There's some big games coming up. And I think the general tone of quality of the performance is better.
Mm-hmm. No, and if you look at just the Oregon State Stanford game on Saturday night, you know, Pac-12 after dark, the production usually is not great. The games just are filling some airtime. It feels like, and maybe it's just me knowing that this commissioner is more engaged than the previous one on all this stuff, It feels like the Saturday night games have been better, that there is some national attention. UCLA, Utah played in a national window so the country could see all of them. And the quality of play, I think your point is spot on there about the transfer portal. Bo Nix comes in, Bo Nix plays, Bo Nix is producing. I mean, and you can go down the list of guys. Caleb Williams is producing.
Yeah, Michael Penix at Washington. Yep. You know, Cam Ward, you know, absolutely. Arizona State, I mean, Emory Jones was playing well before he got hurt. Two things that also are not surprising is that there have been two coaches fired, well, or stepped down, however you want to phrase the Arizona State situation, right? Herm Edwards came into the season on the hottest of seats and is gone, and Carl Durrell at Colorado is gone because of their poor performance. So two coaches fired in the opening 4 or 5 weeks, that has become fairly common around the Pac-12. Three were fired during the season last year, two this year. It is kind of like the SEC in terms of, you know, the lack of patience during the season for getting rid of coaches.
Yeah, usually it's the coordinator goes first and then the coach. But
that's a lot of that's because of the recruiting, right? Because you have the big recruiting window is now middle of December. So you need to have a head coach in place by, say, December 12th to 15th in order to secure your recruiting class. And so that means you got to, if you're going to get rid of a coach, you can't wait till early December when the season ends. You got to do it and get started with your search.
Names that you're hearing around Arizona State and Colorado. I know I ask you this every week, but sometimes things change. Sometimes things pivot. New names rise up. Other names fade off. Colorado and Arizona State for head coaches. What are you hearing?
Well, for ASU, you know, Kenny Dillingham, certainly the Oregon offensive coordinator. They're looking very good on offense. He's young. He's the opposite of Herm Edwards, right? Young and energetic. Knows the college game. Ties to Arizona State and the Phoenix community. Certainly, as long as Oregon keeps scoring, he's going to be, I think, you know, a player in that search. It'd be interesting to see exactly how much traction Sean Aguano gets now that he's got a win. Players are responding to him. There's certainly some appeal for his candidacy in terms of getting more engaged with recruiting the Phoenix high school scene, right? Obviously, he's got lots of ties. So I think those two, Alex Grinch, the USC defensive coordinator, I think is going to be a candidate for both the Colorado and the ASU openings, especially if USC's defense continues to play well. He's got a lot of ties to the out west. The Colorado search is still a little bit new, but I think you probably need to watch the top tier Mountain West schools like Brent Brennan, San Jose State coach, who's having a lot of success this year. Probably could get involved in that one. We'll see. I've heard the name Jeff Grimes, who is Baylor's offensive coordinator for the Colorado job. He is a former Buffalo's assistant coach. Eric Bieniemy, certainly. We'll see if he is a real candidate, the Chiefs offensive coordinator and former CU star. So, you know, both schools, I think, are trying to kind of figure out what they want. And Arizona State's got that extra dynamic of not knowing about the NCAA investigation. And we still don't know exactly, is Ray Anderson going to be given the task of hiring the new coach after his experiment with Herm Edwards, you know, failed pretty miserably.
You know, what's interesting about the Ray Anderson, and it's not really been talked about much, but this is very similar to when Ray Anderson was hired and Todd Graham was already in place. Todd Graham was not Ray Anderson's hire, and it was pretty evident early on, at least in my view, that this isn't going to work. And so if Arizona State is going to have a change at the athletic director's chair, and a lot of this is the alumni base saying we're just not happy with Ray Anderson, and a coach is hired, and then Ray leaves, and that's just the part of college athletics, but we could be facing the same situation again where there's a coaching change, and then the AD goes. I think for just having everything be smooth, it would kind of be nice to see it would be nice to see everything figured out ahead of time. That's just not reality at Arizona State or a lot of college places.
Well, it's interesting. There is a little bit of a proxy for a path that Arizona State could follow, right? Georgia Tech just fired Jeff Collins about 2-3 weeks ago because it wasn't working out. They also got rid of the athletic director, Todd Stansbury. So they cleaned house completely. They fired the AD who hired the coach who was fired, and now they're going to be starting over. And that's, there's a lot to be said for a clean start, not only at the coaching level, but at the AD level. Bring in the AD, let him make the hire, and then you'll hire the AD, then he hires the head coach. Miami, similar situation. Mario Cristobal, they brought in a new athletic director, starting all over. Whether ASU follows that path or not, I don't know. It's hard to guess with Michael Crow. He tends to kind of buck the conventional wisdom, and on the athletic front, that hasn't worked out very well for him.
You know, Kenny Dillingham was a finalist for the Utah State job, and Sean Aguano was a finalist for the Hawaii job. In some cases, people I've talked to said he actually could have had it or may have had it. Who knows? And I'm not saying the Utah State or Hawaii are great jobs, but I think for both of these candidates, they were right there already once before. And I think that should mean something. Arizona State's still paying Todd Graham a lot of money to be gone. I'm sure they're paying her money to be gone. So is the hire financially, is that a direction to go? And I would say the same for Colorado. You know, if Sean Aguano gets passed over here, Sean Aguano get his name out there for other jobs. If Kenny Dillingham gets passed over here, could Kenny Dillingham take his skill set to Colorado? I think those two are kind of tied together on this, John.
Well, they could be looking at it from the same pool of candidates, right? There's no doubt about that, right? It's not like one of those jobs is, you know, ASU is a better job than Colorado, but, you know, we're not talking about USC and Colorado, right? They're probably more similar than they are different. And financially, they're probably going to offer something similar in terms of the compensation package, right? They're not on two different tiers in terms of their budgets. So, yeah, the same pool of candidates could have an impact. Certainly, the increase in talent in the prep level in the Phoenix surrounding area is going to make Aguano maybe a little bit more attractive candidate, you know, than he would have been if this situation had taken place 5 or 10 years ago, because a lot of people want to recruit heavily in the Phoenix area, and ASU has not, you know, they haven't done that. And I don't think the program can ever be what fans want it to be in terms of a consistent winner, unless they are recruiting much better in the Phoenix area.
Yeah. And it's not just getting the recruit on the front side. It's finished second, and then that kid's going to in the portal and come back here. And they're not even on radars for a lot of these guys that go away. They're not in their top five or top 10. So, you know, it's a struggle in this new world. That's the way it goes. I know you said about 3-4 weeks ago when Herm left that Arizona State should hire somebody who could put the fear of God into the University of Arizona. I'm paraphrasing right. A little bit, but have you come around on Sean Aguano at all, John, in terms of a chance of this? Or is this like, that would be so ASU to hire a former high school coach who's been a running back coach for a few years? Or do you see it a little differently with Aguano now that he's had some time?
Well, certainly you got to be impressed with how the players have responded. You know, it seems to me like there's more accountability within the program, getting to practice on time, all that kind of thing, dealing with personal fouls on the field. And that's impressive. I think we got to see how this plays out, though, over the next 6 weeks, right? Sure. I still think that they are probably better off trying to find somebody who has won at the college level. Now, if he wins, you know, what do they got, 6 games left? If he wins 5 of those 6, I think you probably got to give him very, very serious consideration. And in that case, you know, he may worry Arizona a little bit because of his ties to the powerhouse programs in the Phoenix area, because Arizona is hoping to get those kids too. Mm-hmm. So if you're Arizona State and you've got a way to block to strengthen your local recruiting and also hinder Arizona's local recruiting, you've got to probably give it some serious consideration.
Okay. UCLA, before I get you out of here, Do you buy in on the Bruins yet, or are you still on the skeptical stage even after they beat Utah?
No, I'm pretty much buying in. They are really good on offense, right? They've got a terrific combination of quarterback, tailback, and receiver. Chip Kelly is a very good play caller. He has the pieces that fit perfectly with what he wants to do, and he's got a good line. I don't think they've got an elite defense. They're kind of like USC. Their defense is more opportunistic than it is granite. You know, they're relying on turnovers and big plays here and there. But I'm buying for the most part. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how they do at Oregon in 2 weeks.
Yep.
Huge game. Chip Kelly's going back to Eugene. He's going to have a top 10, top 12 team undefeated Oregon's going to be waiting for them. Top 10, top 12 team. That's going to be a huge game. And that's going to, I think, really tell us if the Bruins are the team to beat in the conference.
Do you still see a CFP possibility sitting out here?
Like, I do. You know, the thing about USC and UCLA is they can afford to lose one game, right? UCLA could lose at Oregon and still be a contender, because as long as you're a Power Five champion that only has one loss, you're in the mix, right? It's the second loss that eliminates you. And so both of those teams, they play each other at the end of the year. So, you know, if one of those teams can get into that game with only one loss, win that game and win the Pac-12 championship, they're going to be in the playoff discussion.
Have a good week. Good seeing you and catching up and chopping it up as always, John. Stay safe. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Brett.
There's John Wilner, and we're back with more after this timeout. Ron Wolfley with us for a few minutes to talk people off ledges, to speak to the masses, to say, I would think, I don't want to be sitting here taking your words. My words are, you know, it's not all as well, but it's just not as bad as it looks. It's very early still in the season. It's starting to get to that quarter turn. Yeah, there's some areas of concern, but I think there's more optimism after even a loss to Philadelphia than I expected. Ron, are they getting this figured out?
Oh, my goodness. I hope they are, Brad, at some point in time. It's just been so perplexing to me because, once again, I look at the offense and I see the talent on the offensive side of the ball, even without DeAndre Hopkins. And this offense has really underperformed. It is totally perplexing to me. The defense has gotten incrementally better since the first six quarters of the season were just disastrous. And from that point, at the halftime of the Las Vegas Raiders game, they seem to have gotten better and better as the season has gone along, taking baby steps, of course. But the offense has been the disappointment to me, and I thought that was going to be their strength. And not just their strength, Brad, I thought like Super Bowl caliber strength, and that talent has not showed up together.
Okay, so, and we all go to the DeAndre Hopkins once he gets back here, and I'm on the side of the street of, I don't know, I haven't seen him in a long time. I don't know how great he's going to be early on. But there are some pieces that it's at some point they're going to score in the first quarter. They just have to. This cannot continue, Ron. Like, come on. It just isn't that hard. It's 38-0 now for the season. And I just start there. What's up with that?
I honestly don't know what to say about that, Brett. I do not know. I've never seen anything like it, the way this team is starting and how difficult it is for them to start fast offensively. I think a lot of it has got to do with what defenses are doing. I think defenses, for the most part, are taking more chances early on in games, trying to confuse Kyler Murray and the protection schemes a little bit. But, you know, when a team gets up on Kyler and company, they seem to play a lot of zone, a lot of cover two shell, as a matter of fact. And they play a lot of zone, trying to keep everything in front of them once they get the lead. It happened again yesterday, just watching the Eagles take a 14-point lead. And suddenly here the Cardinals are in the second quarter, midway through the second quarter, before they actually mount a scoring drive and get points on the board. They're just starting horrifically, and I never saw that coming with the talent they have. Hollywood Brown is worth a first-round pick. He's yep. proving that he's worth a first-round pick. And when DeAndre Hopkins comes back, I do look for that kind of impact. But right now, the Cardinals are not getting it done offensively, and I blame the offense for the fact that they're 2-3 right now, because the defense has given them the opportunity to win games. Hey, you only give up 20 points against the Rams. You only give up 20 points against that team yesterday, as loaded as they are with talent on the offensive side of the ball, and you lose those games? Mm-hmm. That's on the offense.
Okay, how much of it is on Kyler Murray? If we're just being specific about Kyler Murray from what you see so far through 5 weeks.
You know, it's interesting because I really did believe that Kyler Murray probably has played the most consistently of anyone on the offensive side of the ball. He hasn't been awful in any game, in my opinion, and yet he has started slowly. And in particular, I will say in the last two games, he has started slowly, I think, himself personally. And when I say that, Brad, I'm talking about inaccurate throws to start. Yesterday was a classic example of that. Missed some wide open receivers, threw the ball out of bounds to an A.J. Green on a nine route. Didn't give him the opportunity to go up and high point the ball and maybe make a play. Missed Zach Ertz, who was wide open on a seven route, a corner route. You know, again, I don't want to put it all on Kyler Murray because he has been the most consistent, but starting, he was right in the middle of not starting well yesterday. As a matter of fact, when he underthrew Hollywood Brown running the post over the top and he underthrew the ball to the safety, was able to make a play on the ball. When if he laid it out there, I think Hollywood has a chance of going to get it. He actually was behind the defenders. So, Kyler has been right in the middle of not starting quickly, and I'm not really sure why that is, other than the fact that defenses, once again, I think, are trying to mix it up.
You know, I'd love to have a camera on you and Dave Pasch during commercial breaks in the first quarter. I would love to hear, like, a microphone of what is being said. I'm not saying you guys are killing them, but just like, are there those moments in the broadcast where you're like, come on, guys, it's a commercial break. We're going to come back and we're going to see if you can finally do it. Or do you just sit there and say, it's got to keep grinding, got to keep hammering the rock. It's going to happen eventually. The baby's going to come.
Yeah. You know, for me, I'm usually yelling, run the ball. That's just me. You know me, I'm old school. I really am. I think this is the part of the game the Arizona Cardinals need to evolve their offense. I've been talking about it for 3 years. Every year I talk to you, every couple of months when I have a conversation with you, even if I haven't seen you in a while, I talk about running the ball and how I think it's the next step for this offense, the evolution of this offense. And again, I'm not talking about putting Kyler Murray under center and suddenly running 21 personnel. I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about doing it 40 times a game. I'm just saying that in this day and age in the National Football League, where the blending is going on of the old and the new, I think you've got to be capable of going out and executing the old and executing the new as well. A mixing and a blending of the two. I have been talking about it for 3 years, putting Kyler Murray more under center as well, just because Bill Belichick believed that you needed to be whatever you needed to beat your opponent. In other words, whatever their weakness was, you needed to be able to exploit it. And if you're not good under center and running some of the tackle zone schemes with the play action that comes off of it, you know, you're handcuffing yourself a little bit here. Maybe it's because Kyler Murray does not want to be under center. Maybe it's because Cliff doesn't want him to be under center. Maybe it's a combination of the two, but I think that's where they need to grow the most. And that's where I think they need to continue to evolve as an offense, but attacking more vertically as opposed to horizontally. That's typically what I'm up there talking about.
Ron Wolfley with us for a couple of minutes. You can hear him on 98.7 AM or FM rather, with Luke Lipinski from 10 AM until 2. And of course, the color analyst on the Arizona Cardinals radio network. Defensively, I've been really impressed with Zach Allen. I think JJ Watt's played very well so far this season. Not seeing the rush from the outsides as much as I'd like to. And of course, the secondary's got just two very talented safeties and other players as well. Defensively, what do you make out of them through 5 weeks, Ron? What do you like? What concerns you?
Just really shocked. As shocked as I am that the offense is struggling the way that they are. I'm really shocked and surprised at how well this defense has played. Listen, they're not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but they continue to me, Bradley, to over-deliver for this team. Vance Joseph, I think, has done a really good job, an incredible job, bringing this unit from the start of this season and how bad the start of this season was to a point of respectability right now. This defense was balling yesterday. Listen, the Philadelphia Eagles, when you watch them on tape, man, they run the ball and they run it really, really well. And I'm not just saying it's Jalen Hurts. Miles Sanders is very, very good. That offensive line is excellent. And nobody talks about their offensive line enough. And yet their talent, you got A.J. Brown. Are you kidding me? You've got Devontae Smith. You've got Goddard, the tight end. They've got weapons all over the field. And they are a really, really good offense because of Jalen Hurts and how he is playing right now. And the defense went out and kept them to 20 points. I'm reminded of the Rams game where the defense went out and kept them to 20 points at State Farm Stadium. Those are two games when your defense goes out against the defending Super Bowl champions and limits them to 20 points. And you play this high-powered offense, number four scoring offense in the NFL and the Eagles, and you hold them to 20 points, you got to win those games somehow, some way. And this defense has really surprised. They've got some young guys that I think are turning into pros, guys that are entering year three, year four. Guys like Marco Wilson, Byron Murphy, Zach Allen, Jalen Thompson. They got guys that are really maturing. Zaven Collins is a young guy that I think is developing as well. Isaiah Simmons had 13 tackles yesterday. Do I want to see more from Isaiah Simmons? Yes, I do. But he was all over the field yesterday. They've got a lot of young pieces that I think are developing right now, but they are a surprise.
Before I get you out of here, and we're talking with Ron Wolfley, let's look towards this coming Sunday. You go to Seattle, and it's funny. I don't go by stats top to bottom. Next Gen Stats has the most efficient quarterback in the NFL after 5 weeks is Geno Smith. Now, if I would have given you that before the season started, you'd say, there's no way, Brad. Put away the cooking sherry. Stop nipping on it. But Geno Smith in Seattle this Sunday, what do you make out of this at this point of the season, Ron?
Man, really, really surprised that this offense is as explosive as it is because of Geno Smith. I mean, Brad, and I know you know this, he's playing better than Russell Wilson.
Yeah, a lot of people are.
Russell Wilson is playing with the Denver Broncos right now, let alone how Russell Wilson played for the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah.
That is amazing to me. I Pete Carroll is a good coach. He really is. The fact that they're 2-3 right now, the fact that they're competitive in games, it really is a testament to the coaching staff that they have up there and to Pete Carroll himself, in my opinion. Anytime you can take a guy who is a retread like Geno Smith, a guy whose confidence had to be waning at some point in time. And for him to attack these first five games the way that he has and have the kind of success that he has had, I'm blown away by Geno Smith, even though he is from West by God, Virginia. I shouldn't be that surprised.
Got it in there. That's good stuff. Ron, thanks. Stay safe.
Okay, brother. Talk to you later, man.
There's Ron Wolfley. And we're back with more after this timeout.